In this segment, Alexander, we need to talk about Canada and the fact that we have a new conservative leader. His name is Erin O'Toole. He will be leading the Conservative Party from now on. And we have the other big news that Trudeau has prorogued Parliament until September 23rd. And with that news, we have the possibility that Trudeau may no longer be Prime Minister, and we may have the neocon war hawk Chrystia Freeland as Prime Minister of Canada, or at least leading the Liberal Party. So we have a lot of news coming out of Canada. All of this action that we're seeing from Canada, I believe, is the result of the We Charity scandal. So it looks like that third scandal of Trudeau's was enough to break the back of his government and to lead to all this change. And of course, we have to see exactly what kind of Conservative Party Erin O'Toole will lead and if it's enough to dethrone the Liberals in Canada. So Alexander, what do you make of these three different but connected stories?
They're definitely connected. I'm going to make one prediction that I think that Trudeau may indeed be on his way out, but I suspect he's going to cling on for as long as he possibly can, because that's what the sort of thing that these kind of people do. Now, proroguing Parliament, let's start with that, because that's an extraordinary constitutional step. It's been done in Canada before by previous prime ministers who've been in problems. Jean-Luc Chrétien, who was the Liberal Party's prime minister about a decade or more, 2 decades ago, he was also involved in scandals in Canada, and he also prorogued Parliament. In other words, he arranged for Parliament not to meet for many weeks' time, and the intention was to prevent proper parliamentary scrutiny of his actions. Trudeau, if you remember, when he became Prime Minister of Canada, he presented himself as these neocon, neoliberal, Obama Rat Pack type people always do. They're the cleanest of the clean, the whitest of the white, corruption where, you know, they don't know what that is. And he gave a definite and categorical promise that he would never prorogue Parliament for the same kind of reason. He would never prorogue Parliament, you know, call Parliament into a long recess in order to prevent parliamentary scrutiny of his actions. He gave a categorical promise. Now he's been caught for the third time in a scandal. This is the third big scandal that we've seen. There was the Aga Khan scandal, which is the first. There was the Lavalin scandal, which is the second. The We Charity scandal is the biggest of the three. It involves the largest sum of money. It involves his own family. So he promised he'd never prorogue Parliament. And of course, he's prorogued Parliament. Now, the fact that he's prorogued Parliament in this way is a sign, I think, firstly, of how big this scandal is, how many difficult questions he's facing, how much of a political crisis this is. Hopefully, it's a sign too that opinion in Canada, amongst the people of Canada, has finally and decisively tilted against him. It's been dismaying to me to see for how long he was being given the benefit of the doubt, but it looks as if a tipping point has been reached. But I also have to say that the fact that he's prorogued Parliament suggests to me that he's not prepared to simply quit and is going to cling on, as these people do, as Tony Blair did, as Obama is trying to cling on in the United States by manipulating first the Democratic Party nomination and then the election itself. These people never like to give up power. And I think he's going to cling on for as long as he can. So that's the first thing. The second is the fact that he's now got this person within the Liberal Party, Chrystia Freeland, who is now manoeuvring quite obviously and transparently to take over from him. She's been gaining in strength and importance throughout the period of his premiership. She was formerly foreign minister. She is, as you absolutely rightly say, a rabid neocon. She is somebody who is fully signed up to all the humanitarian, interventionist regime change agendas that you can think of. She has a very complicated history with her family that, you know, were involved with extreme right politics. When I say extreme right, I mean fascist politics in Ukraine, which she tried to conceal. She's an ardent cold warrior. She wants, you know, to confrontation with Russia and confrontation with China. She was very, very closely connected again to the Obama system, all of the sort of people who were involved in Obama, and she's growing in strength. Now she's become finance minister of Canada, arguably the second most important post in the government. So she's clearly positioning herself to take over. And I'm sorry to say, I think if Trudeau feels that he's really on the way out, she's probably the person he would want to see take over, because ideologically they are very close. She's more strident and more belligerent than he is. But as I said, there isn't really that much ideological difference between them. And then there's the third aspect, which is this final election in the Conservative Party, the Canadian Conservative Party, Canada's traditional right of centre party. They finally got themselves a new leader after a very prolonged and difficult leadership election battle. Hopefully that means that they will come together and present Canada with a viable opposition. I think one of the reasons why Trudeau has been able to cling on for as long as he has is because since the election last year, Canada hasn't had a proper opposition. And that has given him a very clear run so that he's been able to do all sorts of things, like prorogue in Parliament, without attracting a great deal of criticism. But hopefully that period will be over. But I have to say that the recent history of the Conservative Party in Canada, rather like some of the top people in the Republican Party in the United States, it suggests that it's become a very establishment, very mainstream party, doesn't deviate very far from the ideological orthodoxies of neoconservatism and neoliberalism, both in the way that they are applied internationally and in terms of the globalist policies that you see in Canada itself. So it may not be quite the compelling opposition that I would like to see. But, you know, let's wait and see. Maybe it will turn out otherwise, and we will have a more convincing opposition than we've had up to now. But overall, I agree with your overall assessment. It is the beginning of the end of Trudeau. When he starts doing radical things like proroguing Parliament in a way that he said he would never do, it's a sign that he feels that power is slipping out of his hands, even though he's going to try and cling to it. And he's now got Chrystia Freeland positioning herself to take over. And perhaps he's got a convincing opposition party in the Conservative Party that can start to challenge him and the Liberals in a serious way.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at Canada and when I read about Canada, Alexander, I think about the fact that they have not found a populist leader. And that's what they seem to be missing at this point, someone that really does care about Canada rather than the big corporations or the neoliberal agenda or the neocon war machine. They haven't found that populist type of leader yet. I don't see that coming out of the conservatives. Obviously, that's not coming out of the liberals. There are some viable smaller parties which do make a good show in elections, but they haven't gotten to the level of the other two main parties. Saying that, you could describe Trudeau as an Obama neoliberal. You can describe Chrystia Freeland, I think, as like a woke neocon. But as we've seen in many other countries, and more specifically, say, the U.S., the neocons and neoliberals have kind of merged into one faction. We've seen the neocons go to the Democrats. I think we're seeing Trudeau. The Trudeau-Freeland alliance is a perfect example of neoliberal melding with neocon. What does this tell you about the fact that Trudeau is on the way out, but a neocon may actually replace him, about the state of geopolitics now, looking at Canada and perhaps looking at the world? Because with Trudeau gone, you do have one Obama Rat Pack person left, and that's Merkel. But replacing Trudeau, you have Chrystia Freeland. You kind of see the same in the U.S. Should Biden win, which he won't, but should he win, you kind of have that same dynamic in that Biden is a woke neocon war hawk, and he would kind of, you know, move in there, even though he doesn't know where he is and he's lost all his senses. You know, that's still a good way to describe Biden. So it's really interesting to see in Canada what's happening with the neoliberal Obama guy, the Rat Pack guy leaving, but here you have the neocon woke war hawk kind of moving in to take his place. I think it's indicative of the split in society and the split in ideology that we're seeing here all over the world.
Absolutely. What we're seeing is a distancing of the political class and what somebody so brilliantly referred to as the militant center, the militant globalist center. In other words, the large minority of people who support globalization and all of these things, the way that they are increasingly detaching themselves from the feelings of the great mass of people. Because I'm absolutely sure, by the way, knowing the history of Canada as I do, that if Canada did have what you called a populist alternative, in other words, a strong sovereigntist alternative, one which wanted to break with globalization, one which wanted to run Canada more in like the way it used to be run, you know, in the old days when people like, you know, Lester Pearson, people like that were running Canada, I think there would be massive support for it. I think just as there was with Donald Trump in the United States and people like him in other countries, I think there would be a real resonance with that kind of politics in Canada. But the political system in Canada, like the political system in many other places, has everything locked down. And in Canada, which has always been a place which has prided itself on its stability, its underlying decency, its ability to compromise. Unfortunately, all of those factors have made it much easier for the political elite to lock everything down than is true in the United States, which, of course, has a revolutionary tradition. You know, it emerged out of a revolution, or say Britain, where it's the former colonial British Empire, where they have that kind of self-confidence. Canada doesn't, I think. The Canadian people don't quite have that level of self-confidence to be able to take on the established orthodoxies and the established political class head on in the way that you see Donald Trump do in the United States, or someone like Nigel Farage do in Britain. So that's the difference. Of course, things can change and things may change. And I suspect sooner or later they will change in Canada also. Now, talking about some of the things you said, the idea of the team of Joe Biden and Chrystia Freeland, the idea of Joe Biden as president teaming up with Chrystia Freeland in Canada as a sort of partnership makes the blood run cold. I mean, they're both war hawks. They're both obsessed with Ukraine. I mean, it would make a kind of North American, you know, axis of nightmare. That's all I can think of saying. I mean, it's a terrifying prospect. And I don't believe we will come to that, because like you, I think Donald Trump will win the election in November. But my God, if it ever does, that's seriously bad news, not just for the US and for Canada, but for the world in general. So that's the second thing to say. But thirdly, you make a very profound point, because go back, you know, a few years, say the point that I always remember is 2014, where you had this great gathering of the powerful people in the West, and they all decide to impose the sanctions on Russia and launch, in effect, the European part of the, you know, the confrontation we're going through at the moment, you know, the sort of new Cold War, but the Russian aspect of the Cold War. Every single leader who was involved in that decision is gone, apart from Angela Merkel. She's the last one left. She is absolutely part of that team of leaders that Obama built up around himself. Now, Trudeau, in either he wasn't involved in that decision, he is in effect also a part of that team. But if he goes, that style of politics, which Bill Clinton and Tony Blair in some ways created, but which Obama brought to its absolute, you know, pomp, that will have gone. The style will have gone, but perhaps not, unfortunately, the substance, in that we will still have some kind of globalist elite still operating in some countries, like Canada, for example. But it is fascinating to see how these leaders who are associated with these sort of politics and with this kind of style of politics don't last very long, because ultimately people don't like them. They didn't like them in the United States. Donald Trump and what he represents is an emphatic repudiation of Obamaism. We've seen the problems that Trudeau is experiencing in Canada. And of course, even Angela Merkel, who is the one who's clinging on longest, she is due to leave Germany as its leader. She's due to leave as Germany's leader next year. So in the end, this is not a popular politics. It's not a popular political style. And yet, always, it seems to be the one that the establishment tries to impose on us.
Yeah, and the interesting part is that we are seeing a bait and switch, in that we're seeing the neoliberals kind of, you know, letting the neocons move in. I mean, we see it in the U.S., there's no doubt about it. All the neocons support Biden.
Absolutely.
Every single one of them.
You saw
every
that
single
in,
one.
You saw that in the Republican convention, in the Democratic Party's convention. You saw all these exhausted Republican volcanoes, these people who were ardent neocons. And the people who are involved in these sort of neocon policies of the, you know, previous Republican administrations. And they are repudiating and rejecting Trump because, of course, Trump doesn't agree with their ideology, and they're backing Biden, who does. So you're absolutely right. Chrystia Freeland is a neocon. Trudeau is a neoliberal humanitarian pseudo-internationalist. In reality, they're one and the same. And when they feel that when things take a particular turn, they're perfectly happy to pass the baton between each other. By the way, it's exactly the same in Britain. We had Tony Blair, who was, of course, the great interventionist who waged the war against Iraq. Then he's replaced by David Cameron, who started the war against Libya. And now with the Labour Party, we see Keir Starmer, who is edging towards supporting the same kind of policies that the neocons do. So, you know, you have this merger of neocons and neoliberals, which is really very easy because fundamentally they're one and the same. They're both interventionists, and they're both globalists, and they're both anti-sovereignists. They're both one and the same thing.
Yeah, well, okay. So September 23rd, we'll have more news. We're going to follow this story very closely. I'm very interested in this story, as I know you are, Alexander, because as we have said throughout this video, what we are looking at is the neoliberal woke ideology becoming a neocon woke ideology. And the big difference there is that the neocons, they are destructive. They are absolutely destructive war hawks. And so we've kind of gone from bad to worse if Freeland takes over. So, you know, we'll wait and see what happens. And hopefully, I mean, I don't know Aaron O'Toole that much. I don't know his policies that well. But we'll see if the Conservative Party has anything new and fresh to offer the Canadian people in the world.
Yeah, well, I do agree with you, however, that there are alternative parties in Canada. None of them has ever gained, you know, complete traction. But people are interested in them. And I think that if they do feel, if people in Canada finally decide that the establishment is just the establishment and is not going to change, I suspect that Canada is a country where eventually there could be a sort of upsurge of support for one of these parties, a bit like we saw with UKIP in Britain, where it never grew to the size of, you know, winning British politics, but it completely changed the political climate in Britain. And of course, it transformed the Conservative Party. So the Conservative Party decided to change direction because they saw first UKIP and then Nigel Farage's Brexit Party have an effect on you know, the way British people thought and acted and voted. And so they felt they had to switch. And perhaps something like that is also going to happen in Germany if the AfD can put aside its present problems and pull itself together again. So we'll see. Canada, I think, is that kind of country. And I agree, it's a country that bears a great deal of watching because, as I always tell Canadian people, it's a country which has a lot of inherited goodwill. People do look to Canada for leadership on certain things because of, you know, its past history as a very strong and good and stable diplomatic power. So there's still a lot of goodwill to Canada. If Canada pulls itself together, it could change things in a radical way.
All right, Alexander Merkurst, thank you very much, guys. Click on that red subscribe button. If you like this video, you will get notifications every time we put up a new video or do a live stream when you are subscribed. Also, please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and subscribe. Star, your donation really helps us out a lot and helps us report the news from all over the world. We try our best to report stories from all over the globe. And also go to the Durand shop, pick up some magic mugs. I have got a magic mug here, an enamel magic mug of Ireland. I've also got Alexander, an enamel magic mug. They're all full with water of Armenia here. I just got these the other day. I know you are traveling, Alexander. Real quick, I want to say, Alexander, your picture was good at times. It was a little pixelated other times, but your sound should be awesome. Alexander, you are traveling. But once again, we always want to bring the news to you. So, Alexander, what do you have to say about the Durand shop? You have mugs with you. I also think you have a Patriotic Legacy flashlight with you as well.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be without
it. Very, very quick shout out. Very quick shout out.
Now, the reason, by the way, I'm sorry about the image, but as I said, I'm actually in the Peak District National Park, which is one of the oldest national park, I think, in England. And it's this extraordinary hilly, mountainous area in the centre of England, north centre of England. It's surrounded by these great industrial cities, Manchester and Liverpool to the west, Sheffield to the northeast, Nottingham to the south. And it's also, for those who are interested in English history, the part of the world where Robin Hood was most active. And there's a church very close to where I am at the moment, a place called Haversidge, where Big John, Robin Hood's ally, is said to be buried. And also very close to where I am, it's got very strong literary connections, is, for those who are interested in literature, there is the house of Mr. Rochester, who is, of course, a person who eventually marries Jane Eyre. Those of you who are interested in Charlotte Bronte, this is very much her part of the world also. It's called North Lee's House. In the novel, it's called Thornhill Hall, but it is, in fact, the same place. And, of course, I could never, ever, ever go anywhere on a walking holiday, which is what it is, without my trusty Patriot beacon to guide the way, the absolute greatest flashlight in the world. You absolutely need it when you're walking because, of course, it's also got, as well as being a brilliant flashlight, it's got a compass. So you can, you know, if you get lost, which, by the way, you always do when you're walking, you've got a compass there in the handle. And, of course, it never gives up on you because it's solar powered. And if you need to alert your dogs, you can do that by pressing the alarm. And, of course, if you're iPhone or your smartphone dies on you, well, you can recharge it very easily because you've got a port there. So you've got all these wonderful accessories. And of course, you have to drive there with a car, and it's very dark and the roads are winding. And if you're walking down the road, you sometimes find people in difficulties, and you've got all sorts of useful things. You can break a windscreen and get somebody out that way. And then there's also a seatbelt cutter. It's the Patriot Beacon, made in the United States, best flashlight in the world, ships internationally. There is a competition. I think it is the Patriot Beacon 3 that is now part of that competition. And I may be wrong. Alex will correct me if I am. It comes in purple at the moment, so I understand too. And it's the best flashlight in the world, made in the United States, solid, rugged, and an indispensable tool if you're out walking in the day and night, as I am. But of course, you also need to refresh yourself. You have to have water with you. And that's where your Duran magic mugs come in, the enameled ones. You can take these with you into the fields and the woods and the hills and the streams. And you find that they are the best mugs in the world for that. So Alex there has, I think, Italy. I have England. No, it's not Italy. It's Armenia.
Ireland. Yeah. Maybe you don't see the colors. It's Ireland, yeah.
It's not always great, but easy. But this is England, definitely. And of course, it's just right because I am in the absolute heart of England. But, you know, another country which is very favored. My wife has family in Germany. So we also have a German mug, which we're going to give to them eventually. So it's the perfect place for mugs, the perfect place for Patriot Beacons. But of course, you don't need to go on a walking holiday to have these great things, because they're fantastic in any place and in any circumstance. And you can also get these amazing shirts. You'll notice I'm wearing a new shirt also with the flag of Great Britain there. And Alex has got a new embroidered polo shirt.
It's a prototype.
He's coming up with new ideas for the shop all the time. So come to the shop, support the Duran. You'll find all these great things there, an ever expanding gallery of items, each one more fantastic than the other. And you'll support the Duran by coming to the shop, and you'll be the owner of these great things when you come to the shop. And you'll be absolutely tooled up and kitted out for a walking holiday in the forests and the mountains also, if that's what you want to be. So come to the shop, support the Duran, get yourself a Patriot Beacon. Alex will quickly tell you how.
Yes, the contest is for a purple Patriot Beacon, as you said, Alexander, Patriot Beacon 3 flashlight. Use the code Duran20 for a 20% discount at checkout. You'll find a link to the Patriot Legacies website where you can get that Patriot Beacon, and you're automatically entered into the contest along with the Patriot Beacon, the purple one, which is brand new. It's really slick. We'll probably see a photo of it right now. You also get a Duran Magic Mug, porcelain magic mug with the USA flag on it. That is also in the contest. That goes to the winner of the contest. And of course, the Duran shop, duranshop.com. You will find the link for that in the description box down below. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.